You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Across the country, Asian American and Pacific Islander communities are coming together, standing up to often deadly hate and violence directed at their people. Since March of 2020 to February of this year, the group Stop AAPI Hate has received almost 4,000 reports of hate incidents against this group. Now, accounts of violence and malice continue to come in, but many experts say the actual number, well, it is far higher than what's been reported. And Idaho has a, frankly, shameful history of racism and bigotry against people of Asian descent. So today, we are going to spend some time going over that history with the hope that we can learn from it. Our guest for this conversation, Dr. Pilin Yu, professor of anthropology at Boise State University, community organizer Dalton Dagudan-Teagues, and Sam Hui, who is a retired entrepreneur from Boise. I want to thank all of you for taking time out of your day to come talk with us today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you for having me, Gemma.
An honor to be here, Gemma.
So, Dr. Yui, I would like to start with you. Your expertise is in migratory indigenous cultures, but you also have a lot of information on Chinese history here in our state. So could you give us kind of a quick mini history on this group?
Well, yes. In terms of Chinese contributions to the history and culture of Idaho, it really mostly begins with the gold strikes in California and then strikes here in Idaho in the around 1860. And by the 1880s, there were very large numbers of Chinese miners, mostly from the Guangzhou province of China, coming over here to participate in gold mining alongside a lot of other different kinds of folks, and continued through the 1880s and 90s into railroad work, which I think we'll have a chance maybe to discuss a little later, leading to, in spite of a number of prejudicial laws passed by Congress, some vibrant Chinese communities and presence through the 1920s and all the way to the present day.
And Dr. Yu, I understand that you've actually done some research also on a woman named Polly Bemis. Who was she and what was her life like?
I myself have not done quite as much research. I would like to point out that Priscilla Wagers at the Asian American Comparative Center at the University of Idaho has just written a new book about Polly. Polly is a very beloved person in Idaho history. She came here essentially as a slave for the sex industry in around 1869 as a very young teenager. And she not only survived that ordeal, but she thrived to become one of the most important members of the community of Warren, Idaho, which was called Warrens back then, and had a very long and productive and interesting life integrated with the pioneering and mining cultures of Idaho, and was very well known and beloved. And there are actually, you can see some of her belongings at the Idaho State Museum. But I'm amazed by her resilience. Many people would have died under the conditions that she arrived here, let alone her enslavement. There were actually enslaved Chinese persons in the 1870s, long after the Emancipation Act had freed other slaves in this country, and not a lot of people know that. So Polly is a real testament to strength and resilience. And by the way, that's not her real name.
Right. I would assume it was not. Yes.
Yeah.
And before I move on to our other guest, Dr. Yu, I do believe that our listeners are likely familiar with the Chinese Exclusion Act. However, can you remind us of what that was and how it discriminated against this group here in Idaho, but frankly in the West?
Yeah, the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed by Congress in 1882. It's the only act that has explicitly called for the basically barring a race of human beings from entering this country by name. And it explicitly says this is to prohibit Chinese from coming to the United States. The act was then renewed under the Geary Act, I think about 10 years later, that was even more explicit. And it set up bars to citizenship, as well as a very draconian system of identification requirements and deportations. And only merchants and other exempted classes of people were allowed to remain. The idea was to bar Chinese workers from coming. And that act was actually in force until 1942, when the United States deemed it expedient to call China friend again during World War II. Mm.
And Sam, I understand that your family goes back generations here in Idaho. Can you tell us a little bit about your family's story here in the Gem State?
Well, me personally, I didn't move to Boise, Idaho until 1972. However, mm-hmm. prior to that, my grandfather on my mom's side owned the Golden Dragon, probably the most well-known Chinese restaurant, I would say, ever. This was in the period of the 1950s. Before that, my ancestors and relatives could be traced back probably to the later 1880s. They followed the miners to Idaho City. And that is my connection to the state.
And so then, Sam, I'm curious if, that is quite the connection to the state. Were there stories or anything passed down about policies or practices that were frankly targeted against your community in the past?
For me personally, the stories that really stick in my mind are the stories of the Exclusion Act of 1882. And it wasn't repealed mm-hmm. until 1943. Many people don't know that. But even the Chinese community in Boise, we were not allowed to own any property up until the 40s legally. So even though the Chinatown that we had in Boise, which is no longer there due to Boise Redevelopment Agency acts in the late 1960s, there's not one Chinese building that is owned by any heirs to those families. As far as I know, there are no Chinese families that have any connection property-wise, ownership-wise, to downtown Boise. That's always sad in my mind. Let's just talk about an injustice. I mean, my grandfather's restaurant is located where the Grove Hotel is now. I mean, if we had any rights to ownership to that, good Lord, I would have retired 20 years ago. But,
right.
You know, people need to hear that these discrimination practices happened here, even in good old Boise, Idaho. Unless we educate people, no one gets to hear about this kind of stuff.
And Dalton, I want to bring you into the conversation because you are a community organizer. So I am making the assumption that you work on a range of issues that affect AAPI and BIPOC people today. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do? But also what Sam talked about, right? That there are so many people that don't know this history.
Yeah, thank you, Gemma. So I'm a community organizer. I work for the Idaho Coalition Against Sexual and Domestic Violence. A few of the things that we try to do within our communities is to make spaces and events physically accessible to all peoples. In terms of providing those spaces, we try to make sure that spaces, if people are gathering, that are physically accessible to people who move differently in the world or identify mm-hmm. as being a member of the disability community. I think a little bit part of my role in the world in providing places for people to gather is to make the connections with different communities. In the 2% of Asian people in Idaho, it's very easy to set us aside. But I think if we form solidarity movements with other folks in the immigration movement and also in the Black Lives Matter movement, we can form a larger voice and a larger horizon where all people can be where all people can be free and reach their fullest potential.
Dalton, I'm curious about how the history of exclusion and bigotry in particular with the AAPI community, impacts the work that you do today?
Totally. So one of the things that we know about gender violence is that it impacts people from historically marginalized communities at higher rates of violence. They experience higher rates of violence. We know this in Indigenous communities and missing and murdered Indigenous women, but also in Asian communities as well. Part of the conversation that was missing in the Atlanta shootings is the fetishization of Asian people and Asian women, and that is a part of white supremacy. So that a lot of white supremacist values lead to more violence within our communities that don't necessarily get addressed.
And Dalton, you've reached out to organizations, correct, that represent different Asian and Pacific Islander ethnic groups to really create easier access for these different voices to participate in protests and in demonstrations. So I'm curious about what kind of barriers, if any, or breakthroughs are you having when you are trying to build this broader community to raise these voices?
Yeah, we're experiencing a lot of different kind of reactions to what is happening or what has happened in Atlanta. But one of the things that is difficult is people respond differently. So some people, when they hear of trauma happening within our communities, they take to the streets. And some people, when they hear of trauma and things that are happening to them, to their community members, they have a more internal response and need for healing. I think one of my roles is to be able to provide spaces for both people and the different calls to what it means to be safe within our communities is also really important. An increase in police presence within our communities does not mean that our communities are safe. It means that our communities are being policed and are likely going to be interacting with the criminal legal system.
And Dalton, before we take a break, what do you see as the next step in creating, you know, greater solidarity, not just within, you know, the BIPOC community and the AAPI community, but frankly, folks who are allies who want to be allies?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to what Dr. Yu and Sam have said. It needs to be a confrontation of our history and exploitation, our history of exploitation in America. I think one of the most concerning things that's happening within our communities is the upcoming racist and sexist concepts bill that would take that education away from our young people and potential leaders in our community. It needs, before any healing can be done within our communities, we have to really take a deep look into our history and be responsible to, so that we can be responsible in making pathways for healing within our communities.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we need to take a quick break, but stay with us because we have so much more to talk about in regards to the AAPI community here in Idaho. More Idaho Matters next. More Idaho Matters right now. Before the break, we were learning about some of the history of hate and bigotry that's faced the AAPI community in Idaho. If you don't know what that stands for, that is Asian American and Pacific Islander, and how members of this community are rising above this legacy today. So returning now to our conversation with Dr. Pei-Lin Yu, Professor of Anthropology at Boise State University, community organizer Dalton Dagundon-Teagues, and Sam Hui, who is a retired entrepreneur from Boise. Sam and Dr. Yu, can you talk to us about the work that the two of you have done in memorializing the history of Chinese railroad workers in Idaho? And Dr. Yu, why don't you start?
Yes, thank you. We've worked together with a gentleman named Jim Lance, who is a retired railroad engineer, on a project to create a suitable memorial to an unnamed Chinese railroad worker who passed away during an accident in the 1880s near the town of Glen's Ferry. And I was able to connect Jim Lance with Sam, and they did amazing work in being able to procure support for this memorial to this gentleman. And we actually were able to dedicate it in June of last year. And Sam, you know, I would like to turn it over to you because you actually were really there on a day-to-day basis getting this going.
Well, Palin, this project definitely would not have come to fruition without your help. So I thank you for, you know, doing your due diligence and getting this together. The reason why I participated in this project is that I just felt like, you know, I never learned about the Chinese railroad workers during my public education here in Boise. And I went through K through 12 and graduated from Boise State, never once learned about Chinese and their contribution to the railroads in Idaho. So to me, that was just kind of an injustice that I just needed to write in my own way.
And then Sam, also talk to us about the fact that Boise had a Chinatown, because of course, not only do people probably not know about the influence of the Chinese railroad workers, a lot of folks don't even know that there was a Chinatown. And what happened to that?
Yes, there was actually a fairly vibrant Chinese community here. And there was a Chinatown in downtown Boise, located probably in the vicinity of 6th and 7th, Front Street, Grove Street, and Idaho Street and Main Street, you know, right in the heart of downtown. But due to the Exclusion Act of 1882, you know, modernization, and then the Boise Redevelopment mm-hmm. Agency, and the fact that the Chinese couldn't own any property, they're all gone. You know, that's something that, for me, I need to point that out. And as I get older, you know, it just really hits close to home to me that they were basically forced out. Yeah. So there's definitely an injustice there that, you know, just doesn't go away with me.
And Dr. Yu, why do you think this history isn't talked about more?
I'm not sure if there's a single answer to that, but I think, right. You know, one of the issues that has arisen is that really there is no place. I think this really speaks to Sam's point, the sense of place, of centering. There is no place for that. We don't have a museum. We don't have a block. We don't have anything that commemorates this particularly unique aspect of history of Idaho, which is the Chinese presence. I do want to point out, though, that there are a couple of wonderful things that people can visit, places that people can visit at the U.S. Forest Service. In Idaho City, there is the Panyam grocery building, which the Forest Service has restored. And that is seasonally open to visitors to see some really important artifacts that are from the Chinese presence in Idaho City. Also in Warren, Idaho, the Payette National Forest has a small display in Warren, which is sort of a semi-ghost town. So there are things, if you open your eyes and look, so, you know, we hear sometimes mm-hmm. about the term Chindon, the street Chindon, which is a contraction of Chinese gardens, which is based on the Chinese gardens, the very extensive Chinese gardens that were cultivated along, in fact, that Garden City is named after. If you open your eyes, open your ears, you can see those things. But there has been no home for this. And so I think the sort of historic erasure of Asian Americans and even Pacific Islanders, you know, I think it's really a matter of asking people to maybe dig a little deeper and notice things. For example, the Owyhee Mountains are named actually after Hawaii. There were some right. Hawaiian surveyors who were out there surveying in the 1800s to basically establish boundaries and learn about the state of Idaho. Some of our first Idahoans were actually Pacific Islanders. We have Minidoka nearby to our east, where the National Park Service has commemorated the internment of Japanese Americans in Idaho. So although there's nothing dedicated yet, I think there are places to go and see and to open up your eyes. Look at the map, get out there a little bit. The weather's getting great. And I would like to sort of end this little plug by stating that the Idaho Museum of Mining and Geology will, when it's safe, be opening up a new exhibit on the history of Chinese mining in Idaho, hopefully by the fall. So please do keep an eye open for that.
And Dalton, I'm curious to know how much you think that anti-Asian rhetoric from political leaders like former President Trump and others has contributed to the violence and the hate that we've seen in particular over the last year.
Yeah, I think the narratives about this being a China virus or the COVID-19 virus is something that has contributed to the violence within our communities. I don't think it is anything that's new, as mm-hmm. Dr. Yu and Sam have said. The history of violence against Asians is not just about physical violence that we're seeing today. It is about the systemic disenfranchisement for Chinese Americans and Asian folks not being able to own land and property leads to the violence. Own land within our communities. I think this is, this is something that's not new within our communities. Right. And it is something that we all have to take a deeper look at and take a braver look at our own histories.
Well, Dalton, I mean, I think maybe, you know, we as people who are not disenfranchised, like myself being Caucasian, need to actually take a deeper look into this, because, you know, we are not the ones who have experienced what you have experienced, and maybe it's our responsibility to do a little bit more.
I totally agree.
So I want to thank all of you for your time today. So appreciate it. We've been talking with Sam Hui, a retired entrepreneur from Boise, community organizer Dalton Dugan-Donteagues, and Dr. Palin Yu, professor of anthropology at Boise State University. True thanks to all of you for sharing your time and as well as your energy with us. More Idaho Matters next.